After wishing you good morning, good afternoon, for today, we'd like to introduce a new source, a new sefer. It's also an anthology of tshuvas. It's called Haviani Chadarav, and it was published here recently in Israel. And I don't know if you received the text that David Spiegel was able to send out. I sent it to him. If you weren't able, then we'll have Torah Shebaal Peh. If you were able, then you'll see in the Sefer Haviani Chadarav on page Kuf Lamed Hey a series of two tshuvas from Rav Moshe Brandsdorfer, who's the head of a bezdin here in Yerushalayim called Heichal, or Heichal Horah. And the first question he raises is regarding the use of a certain particular kind of a style, a model of a mask that came out recently. And what's kind of unique about this mask is that in order to fit it perfectly on your face, and especially to tighten the area around your nose, so separating your eyeglasses from your nose so you don't get fogged up, it has what he calls a pas dak, which is made of mateches. So it has a thin strip that is metal, a metal string. And it's inside the mask, but it's adjustable, so that every person can tie it onto his face in a way that it fits on his face. And it's a very helpful kind of thing. So he says in our environment, where they're requiring you when you go out publicly to wear a mask, what happens on Shabbos with regard to this pass, this string, which you need to adjust so that it holds on properly to your nose. And he says that the issue on Shabbos is what's called tikkun mana. So let's say just a few words about that concept called tikkun mana. We don't improve utensils on Shabbos, because to do so, if you do it on a permanent basis, make a change in a structure of a utensil, that's called makeh b'patish, which is the last of the list of the 39 melachos in Masechta Shabbos. And makeh b'patish means that final change, that final hammer blow that the professionals use. Now, he admits that we're not talking about a real tikkun mana, because you're not really structurally changing the utensil, and furthermore, it doesn't require any sort of professional work, and it would not qualify on a biblical level as makeh b'patish. But he introduces a concept called mechzeh kimitake mana. It looks like he's fixing up a utensil. And we have many isurim or shvusim derabanan, rabbinic isurim, to avoid on Shabbos things that look like a malacha, meaning there may be some technical reason why you are exempt in this case. You didn't really violate the malacha, but nevertheless, it's domel malacha. And as a result of that similarity to malacha, the Rabbanan prohibited it. And he writes here in this tshuva that Horesi, I told the Shoel in my tshuva, my ruling, that lechatchila yesh li mana milasos kein b'shabbos, that if all things are ideal, he should avoid this kind of situation, and he should set up the mask on Erev Shabbos, and by tightening it around his face and taking it off, if he could just put it back on, then he hasn't made any change, not even a slight change, in the mask, and as a result, it's not even mechze kimetakim mon. So all this would be ideal if he could set this up before Shabbos. However, any good posek will always tell you what's the fallback position. It's Shabbos. This is the mask that I have. Are you telling me that it's absolutely prohibited? And here Rav Ransdorfer offers a very interesting suggestion. And he says, Im elo masecha muchana, he doesn't have it prepared, mibod yom, yafach osa elyon lamata v'tachton lamata. He says that what he could do is, he could turn it upside down. And although it won't be a perfect fit, because again, he wants to tie it around his nose to keep it above his, you know, to keep it above his nose and separate all the air that's coming out of his nose and his mouth below that from his eyeglasses and so forth. He also wants to keep it tight so it doesn't fall down. But nevertheless, he thinks, and again, I'm assuming he checked this out, and it could be done upside down. Now, I think what he has in mind here, although it's a very short tshuva, you have to fill in the blanks, is that if we're talking in the worst case scenario, where he does it the normal way, that it's only mechzei kimisakid mona, so we're dealing with not a violation of olacha of makar patish d'oraisa, but rather it's a shvus d'rabanan, then we could apply the principle of shinui. The Gemara very often, when it comes to d'rabanans, if there's a pressing need to achieve a certain goal, and it will entail violating an issa d'rabanan, so the Chachamim will ask you to do it with a shinu, do it in an unusual kind of fashion. And now you have two factors working in tandem to permit this activity. Number one, it's only mechzei kimetakin mono. He's tightening, but he's not adding something to the very structure of the utensil. And although he says it's a kind of a permanent change in the object, but it's not profound of a change, and he could always readjust it, for example, if let's say it didn't fit properly and so forth, so it's not really totally permanent. And to boot, that if he does it in an unusual way with a shinui, then we could allow it. And this is all for the sake of the need, because this is the mask that he has and he wants to go out on Shabbos. So for example, again, he doesn't have any footnotes here, any analogies, but the Gemara has in Masechta Shabbos different kinds of concoctions that you mix together, you know, with vinegar and other liquids, and you put in some dried grains and so forth, you know, toasted grains, which is called keli in the Gemara, and he needs to make this concoction. And it may have health benefits for him, so the Gemara says that he has to do it in an unusual way. Instead of putting the vinegar second, he puts the vinegar first, and then he adds the toasted grains. And that means that in a Shavuos Rabbanan on Shabbos, when necessary, we will allow doing it b'shinui. And it's very interesting because at the very end of this 10-line tshuva, he writes that ozniot, he calls them otmei oznaim, we call it ear stopples. He says they're also, they're made from a kind of silicon, and what you do is you actually change the, you know, the form of it in order that it should fit your ears, like this case of the mask, which he's tying in a way that will fit onto his face. And he says that also should be avoided on Shabbos, because mekablim tzuras ha'ozen, and he should not do this on Shabbos. He also talks about things that you put around your face and they take on the shape of your nose. All these come under michzei kimasakin mona, and they should be avoided on Shabbos. When need be, litzorek gadol, we're going to allow you to do this with a shinui, because it's only michzei kimasakin mona, and it's not real tikkun mona. His second question I found very fascinating. And this, he says, was asked by a Jew in America. And as a result of Corona, the authorities did not allow the synagogues to open at all. But in a later stage, they allowed the synagogues to open, but on the condition that there would only be 10 people praying in the synagogue in one place at one time. And this person who's writing the Shaila to Rav Moshe Brandsdorfer is the unlucky task of being the Gabbai of the Beis HaKnesses. So you could immediately guess what the question is going to be. There are 60 members of the shul that want to come to pray, and he has to decide which of these 60 members should get first dibs and should be zoche to be mispal b'tzibur. And I was very surprised, personally, by the answer of Rav Brandsdorfer. He's one of the very famous poskim here in Yerushalayim. And he says that the only way that I would allow you to daven in the shul is through a goral. And you all know what a goral is. A goral is a lottery. And he says you have to take a lottery. Again, you could probably do this online, right? You pay a lottery for every single individual tefillah. In other words, somebody may win the lottery to be one of the 1 out of 6 of the lucky ones for Shacharis, and then we'll have another goral for Mincha and a third one for Ma'ariv. And only those who win the lottery will be allowed to enter into the Beis HaKnesses. He's not going to allow anybody in unless they won the lottery. And again, like any good posek, always giving you a fallback position. What happens if you don't have the ability to set up this goral, let alone for every tefillah b'fnei atzma? And listen how harsh he comes down here. Again, with a certain new perspective on this question. He says, "Im eino yochel laruch goral mikol midei sibot." He says, if it's impossible to run this lottery for whatever reason, then do not open the doors of the Beis HaKnesses. Let everyone daven be a chidus in his house. And what halachic principle is he implementing here? He says, Chamira sakanta me isura. He wants to suggest that if there's no goral, this is a sakana. What does he mean, a sakana? Let's say, first come, first serve, right? So what's the element of sakana here? I mean, I understand the isura. The isura is that we want to daven b'tzibur, but what's the sakanta here? And he writes, ki im chas v'sholam al yidei chalukas hamakovos, through this process of deciding who's going to get to sit in the shul, yavo lidei isur of Lashon Hara, of Sinas Chinam, of Ktata, Ktata means Machlokes, Tiye Sakana Gidola Yoser. This will increase by a few notches the Sakana of Corona. And therefore, counterintuitive here, it's paradoxical, by opening the shul and risking the possibility of Machlokes as to who will get to sit there in the shul, amongst the 10 people that they allow, there's going to be an antagonism and a confrontation, which is going to undermine the peace and the harmony in the shul. It's going to create Lashon Hara. It's going to create Machlokes. That is more dangerous, he says, than davening v'yachidus. So I wanted to add 2 comments here, and then I'll hear your comments as well. My first comment is that I think, whether consciously or unconsciously, he has in mind a famous tshuva of Rav Chaim Palagi, who was a posek in Turkey, about 2 centuries ago. Actually, and just to show off my library... Just kidding. But I have in my hands 2 different books here. These are bibliographies. This book, by the way, is a biography about Reb Chaim Palagi. It's over 500 pages long. I mean, the man was a prolific posek, and amongst Sfaradim today, he's like, you know, holy of holies. And he has an entire tshuva in which he claims, he's writing about a magefa that took place 2 centuries ago, that it was so dangerous, the worst element in danger was machlokes. And he proves from a parsha in the Torah, the parsha of Korach and so forth, that a magefa is very often a result of machlokes. And if you don't reduce the machlokes, then the magefa goes up. It's an inverse relationship. The more that there's controversy and there is antagonism, the greater the sakana. And he goes on in his tshuva to write, a person should spend every last dime that he has in order to avoid machlokes during a magefa period, in order to guarantee both olam hazeh and olam haba. And therefore, you know, it's a very great thing that the Jewish people want to daven b'tzibur and go to shul, but if it's going to create machlokes, drop it. Because of chamira sakanta beisura, the sakana of machlokes. You know, it's interesting to look at machlokes from that perspective, to classify it not as, okay, you know, we don't have the peace and the harmony in the community, terrible, terrible, but he's putting it in a whole new category. It's called sakana during a magefa. The second comment that I wanted to make is that if you happen to recall, we had a discussion about the Ezras Noshim, about the women, and they want to come to shul, Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, etc., etc., and there are those on the committee who want to advocate in favor of giving up those places for the men. And we had a long discussion about this, and I just wanted to point out to you that in the course of that discussion, this is just a review if you remember this, and if you don't, it's the first time you hear it, but it's very fascinating. About 2 centuries ago, during the cholera epidemic, Rabbi Akiva Eiger, who's like, you know, like the holy of holies for Ashkenazim, he writes a letter, and it's a long, long letter about tefillah bebeis hakneses, and it's almost like he's writing from the perspective of the Department of Health. I mean, it's unbelievable how many things he writes in the letter that you'll hear on the news about how to avoid the spread of cholera. And in this letter, he advocates in favor of limiting the number of people who are coming to shul. And he actually gives us a triage, a list of who comes first. So on the list that we have to guarantee, and he's talking specifically here about Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, the Grivit, which means the Rav of the community, and then the Dayonim Kvuim, he says that there are Dayonim who live in the community, who serve on the Beis Din on a permanent basis, and then the Gabbai. We have to guarantee that the Gabbai is going to go to shul. You know, if you leave him out, we're in trouble, especially during an epidemic, because the Gabbai has to really make sure that everything goes smoothly. And then he says that the Bali Tfilos, if you have, again, this is very specific to Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, where you need a Bal Tfilo, not everyone could serve as a Bal Tfilo, and a Bal Tokea. He says that in the Ezras Noshim, we have to make sure that the Rebbetzin gets a place. And then he goes on to say that there's a Gabaot. Okay, in other words, not only do we point to Gabbai on the men's side, but we have to point to Gabbait on the women's side. This is Rabbi Kivega 2 centuries ago. So that, I don't know why Rav Brandstorfer doesn't quote this Igeris from Rabbi Kivega. Maybe it missed his radar screen. And instead he has a goral. He wants to have a lottery. Maybe Rabbi Kivega would accept a lottery after you've already assigned the seats to those who absolutely have to be there in shul. Okay, then, before I go on to the next shiloh, which I want to ask and address, if anybody has any comments now, that would be appropriate. If not, again, I have a lot to tell you in the short time that we have, and it's up to you. You decide.
All right. I was surprised they didn't require or allow a person who has a chov to daven.
I don't know. I don't see any discussion about a chov, because you may argue that the Iker Mitzvah is tefillah, and I'm not sure if somebody has to give up their place in the shul on behalf of someone else who has a chov. Maybe we could write another tshuva about that, and maybe someone who has yartzeit would have a special status. I don't know. Next question, which again, if you have the text, you'll find it here on page Kuf Tzadi Dalin in this book, Heviani Chadarav. And this is a tshuva from Rabbi Yitzhak Zilberstein, and I was totally unaware of this tshuva. And he writes that amongst the symptoms of corona, one of the most common symptoms is loss of smell. And as a result of loss of smell, we have also loss of taste. So I don't know if anyone here in the audience is willing to admit that they don't smell and taste like they used to. But if that's the case, then you probably had corona, whether you know it or not. And this is very common. So what's the shaila? So you may recall, once upon a time, we discussed the issue of reach, of smelling, especially with regard to Avdola Motzei Shabbos. I don't know if you remember that discussion that we had. But this is a discussion about achila, about eating, and the issue is, do we make a bracha if we don't taste the food? Shall we say that the very fact that the food goes down the esophagus into the belly, I mean, that's enough to generate a bracha? Or do we say, no, you have to taste your food? Now again, you may ask me, why do I have to taste my food? Well, here there might be a difference between what's called the bracha rishona, lefanel, and the bracha lachreo. In the case of the bracha lachreo, that's Birkas Hamazon, it says, v'achalta v'savata uberachta. So there's a very special emphasis on svia. And even if he doesn't taste his food, he feels satiated. That also is not so simple, because some people have symptoms in which they don't even feel satiated. But that's one approach that has to be mentioned here. And number two, with regard to Birchas Hanenim, which is the Bracha Rishona, not the Shevach Vodoya Lachrea, so where's the Hana? Now, Birchas Hanenim, when we talk about getting benefit from food, the halacha operates on two different levels, and we'll soon see this in the tshuva. One is called hanas grono, which is more or less the taste buds in his mouth, and the other is hanas meov, the feeling, as we said before, of satiation. So again, if I grant you the following premise, that he does feel satiated, although he doesn't feel the taste of the food, we may perhaps want to differentiate between the bracha lachrea, which is Birkas HaMazon, and the bracha rishona. And a bracha rishona without tasting something is a problem. So if Zilberstein immediately, without even passing go, he points to the main sugya that formulates the principle that without enjoying your food and the taste of the food, you don't make a bracha. How do I know this? So this is sugya in Perketzad Mevorachim, Daf Memdalet Omebeiz and Mesechta Brachas. And the Gemara says that if you're drinking water, then it depends. Im Shasa Mayim Litzimono, if he drinks water because he's thirsty, Mevorach Shahakol Nia Bidvaro. Im Shoseh Lahavir Etzem Miagoron Eino Mevorach. So if you take this Gemara literally, the Gemara excludes a bracha in the following case. You have something caught in your throat. You want to clear your throat. Sometimes it's a matter of urgency. You know, give me a cup of water immediately. And in such a case, you don't make a bracha. Can we extrapolate from that case, that exception, where you leave out the bracha, to other cases? And Tosfos says that this principle applies whenever he is drinking water and he's not enjoying the water. It doesn't quench his thirst. He's not thirsty. And it's not the case, it's not limited to the case where he has something caught in his throat. That's just an example of many possible examples. And a person might drink water because it's healthy for him. The doctor told him that he needs hot water. Maybe he has a cold and hot water will help him. It'll increase his body temperature. I mean, there are a host of different reasons why a person might drink water. And according to Tosfos, there's only one case where you drink water and you make a bracha on it. And that's when you're thirsty. And now the question becomes, why isn't it considered beneficial, or hanah, as you would say, when he's choking on a piece of bone or something? You know, he swallowed a bone, whether it's a fish bone or a meat bone, I don't know, but he's got to get it out. That's also called hanah. But the answer is that hanah does not have any taste benefit. He doesn't enjoy the taste in any sense. When you quench your thirst, that itself is considered hanah's grono. But when you're taking something out, or for example, Tosfos gives another example of refuah, that he's drinking something simply for therapeutic purposes, then lo boy bracha. And he quotes Rabbi Amram Gaon, he quotes one of the Gaonim, you don't make a bracha. Now, there's a machlokes, two opinions in Tosfos, about whether he makes a bracha achrona in such a case. So again, he fills up his belly, but not for the purpose of enjoying anything. He doesn't get any benefit from the taste. He's drinking the water for any number of reasons, but not to quench his thirst. And he doesn't make a bracha lefanel. Tosfos says that, according to Rav Amram, one of the Gaonim, he says he make a bracha lacherev, but if he fills up his belly, he makes a bar nefashos. And then he quotes Rabbeinu Moshe, who says no, that if he's not nene, then even li'achrov, he doesn't make a bracha. And the Shulchan Aruch paskins in Arachayim Simon Reish Dalit, Hashose Mayim Litzma'o, Mevarech Shahakol, uli'achrov bori defoshos. If he's thirsty, he makes the bracha lefanel, the bracha lachrel. Aval in chanikose umso, if he got stuck with a bone in his throat, he drinks the water to get rid of that bone. And the Mishnah Berurah points out over here that the Shulchan Aruch by Paskin, like that second opinion in Tosfos, Rabbeinu Moshe, he's equating the bracha before you eat with the bracha after you eat. And in both cases, you need to have hanah from the mayim. And if he's not doing it for the hanah purposes, he's only doing it to get rid of something that he got caught in his throat, and he's not thirsty at all, his chech, his palate doesn't get any benefit, then in such a case, not only does he omit the bracha lefanel, but he even omits the bracha lechrea. But then the Mishnah Berurah wants to suggest that this halacha only applies to mayim, only to water. And in the case of water, which has really no taste to it, the hanav mayim is the tzimon, the thirst, the quenching of the thirst. Aval kisha shosa shar mashkim, if he's drinking other beverages. In such a case, even though af kisha ein shose v'yochlo achshakim lahavir umtza. So imagine, again, I'm not a beer drinker, but let's say all you had to get rid of this bone that's caught in your throat was a bottle of beer. He says, in such a case, the Mishnah Peru says, Chayav levarech ola b'tchila ula basof. He will make both brachas. Why? Because there is some sort of benefit that he gets from other mashkim that have a taste to it. Now, let's get back to our case. We're talking about a corona victim who has no sense of taste. He doesn't have a sense of smell either, probably. He doesn't get any benefit from his food. Can he make a bracha on his food? And the answer seems to be that although he's motivated by the, let's go back to Mishnah Berurah's case, he's motivated by the need to get rid of this bone in his throat, nevertheless he gets some benefit from it, because it does have inherent taste. Says Rav Zilberstein, here in this case of the corona victim, right, he might be drinking other beverages, but he doesn't get any benefit from the taste. He just doesn't have functioning taste buds. In the case of the Mishnah Berurah, although he's not motivated to drink because of the pleasure that he gets from the taste, but nevertheless he does get the pleasure. And since he enjoys the benefit, this hanos cheich, therefore he makes a bracha both lefanel liachreel. But lu yitzur, what would be in a case where he gets no benefit whatsoever, he's just not capable physically, biologically of doing so, then even the Mishnah Berurah would agree that although we're not talking about water, we're talking about other beverages and other foodstuffs, he would not be making a bracha because there's no hanah whatsoever. And then he quotes the Ra'ah. Now the Ra'ah was a Sephardic Rishon almost 1,000 years ago, Rabbeinu Aaron HaLevi. And he writes that the reason why the Gemara in Masechta Brachos addresses the case of water exclusively is for another reason entirely. And that is because Maya lo zayni. Maya does not have calorie content. I'm giving it my own twist. Meaning, there's no real satiation in the body from water. Again, psychologically, you may feel that your body, your stomach is bloated, it's full of water. But in truth, it does not engender what's called zayni. And that is what is excluding Maya. And therefore, the Ra'ah comes to the following conclusion, that there are two independent machayvim that would generate a chiyuv bracha. One is hanoas chech, that he enjoys it, and that would apply in the case of water, because he's thirsty. And number two, in the case of other beverages, maybe because he tastes the unique, enjoyable taste of the beverage, even though he's not motivated for the hanah. And then there's another machayev, which is called zayni. And zayni means that it increases your calorie content. It gives you a sense of satiation, and it gives you energy, and so forth and so on. And therefore, the Ra'ah is now breaking new ground. He's offering me a whole new alternative route for justifying a chiyuv bracha. We're obligated in a bracha because of zayni, even in a case where he has no hanas chech. So that in the case of water, if it would have been zayni, then it's irrelevant to whether he's thirsty or not thirsty, and he quenches, that's irrelevant. He has zayni. But the answer is that water is unique. It doesn't have zayni. In other beverages, zayni itself, the fact that it, as we said before, it gives you those calorie content, that itself is hanos me'ayim. That's enough to generate a bracha. And before I take questions, I just want to add, so we get the whole picture, a tshuva from the Avnei Nezer, and the Avnei Nezer. And again, I want to take this opportunity to thank everyone for showing up here today. It's very nice that you joined me for the shiur. And the Avnei Nezer says the following, that according to the Ra'ah, that Hanas Me'ov, the fact that he is now satiated, is enough to generate a bracha. He says, I have a Minchas Chinuch, and the Minchas Chinuch wants to suggest that, at least according to one opinion, we need two things. We need what's called hanoas grono, and we also need hanoas meyav. In other words, when we go back to the pasuk, it says v'achalta v'savata, and then uberachta. And Birkas HaMazon becomes our paradigm for brachos, and you need two elements, two conditions that have to be fulfilled. Not the way the Ra'ah said it, that it's one, either one or the other, and even if you have no anos grono, you will make a bracha because of anos meyav, when he feels zaini, but the other option is we need both. We need hanoas grono and hanoas meyav. We need v'achalta, and v'achalta means the hanoa that you get from eating, because you taste the food and enjoy that benefit, and we need v'savata, the hanoas meyayin. And the Avnei Nezer says that we don't need both hanoas grono and hanoas meyav, although again there is certainly such an approach. And again, after doing a lot of research, the Avnei Nezer, who is the Sokach of a Rebbe, he writes that it's a machlokas the Rambam and Rashi, and Rav Zilberstein comes to the conclusion based on a Gemara in Psachim that all you need is hanoas me'ayim, even without hanoas grono. And what does the Gemara tell him in Psachim? This is like our curveball from left field. The Gemara says, bola matzah yotza, that if a person takes a piece of matzah and he literally shoves it down his throat, he swallows it, he's yotza. However, bola morar, if he shoves morar down his throat, lo yotza. And the Levush, who lived about 5 centuries ago, once again I have a copy of his sefer, writes that the difference between matzah and morar is that although matzah has an element of zecher legeula ulecherus, nevertheless the ikar achila is lesova lamale eskreso kishuhura ev, that if he has hunger, he's suffering from hunger, now he eats the matzah and he no longer is hungry. And that's the kirma mitzvah. And he's Yotzevim Biblia. But in the case of Marar, Marar has nothing to do with filling up his belly. The entire mitzvah of Marar, from A to Z, can be reduced to the Merirus, to the Ta Merirus, that he feels the bitter taste. And if he shoves it down his throat in such a way, again, you'd have to imagine how he'd do it, but he doesn't feel the merirus. But in matzah, although maybe he won't have that element of cherus, but he will have the basic mitzvah of achila, which he will fulfill even biblia, even without enjoying it. So Zilberstein, in a brilliant move, quotes this Gemara, as I said, from left field, to prove that we will make a bracha simply because the belly is filled. And he says the following. If you read the Gemara carefully, I'm going to play a game with you. I'm going to make up a Gemara that doesn't exist, just to demonstrate my point. The Gemara says that if he swallows the matzah, he can't make a brach of hamotzi lechem in aretz, or the brach of alachilas matzah, and he cannot recite Birkas HaMazon. Well, that's not true. The Gemara doesn't say that. So here's the diuk of Rav Zilberstein. He says if you read the Gemara in Pesachim carefully, the entire issue in the Gemara is whether or not he fulfills the mitzvah of achilas matzah and in conscious morar through blia, and even though he doesn't taste the matzah, can he make a bracha on it? The Gemara never addressed the issue of the bracha of hamotzi lechem in aretz. That was a given that he would make that bracha, even in the case of bala matzah. So although the Avnei Nezer vacillates back and forth in his tshuva, whether you need hanas grono as a prerequisite for the bracha lefaneh and the bracha lachrea, and it could very well be that the Avnei Nezer is right, and it's a machlokas Rashi in the Rambam, but the final decision for the ruling la'alach lamaisa is going to be based on the Gemara Psachim, that Bola Matzah, since he has Hanos Kreso, he will make all the brachos, and in this case, even the bracha for the Cherus, for the Alachilas Matzah. And therefore, both bracha lefonea hamotzi and bracha lachrea birkas hamazon will be recited based on the fact that you feel satiated. It adds your calorie content. That's my own addition. And he says, b'inyanenu, therefore, in our case of corona, afal pisha ein lo hanos goron, even though he feels no taste because his taste buds are not working, he doesn't smell anything, he doesn't taste anything, nevertheless, he will recite the bracha, v'havi ke'ein bola matzah. And his situation would be like the case where he shoves the matzah down his throat. She'yachal levarech birkas hamotzi u'birkas hamozah. Yeah, Joe. Can you speak a drop louder, if you don't mind? Because, you know, on Zoom...
You wouldn't say that they're bringing out matzah as opposed to something else, that maybe...
The reason why the Gemara mentions matzah is because you would have a hama mina salka daitka mina, just like in Bala Morar, where you're lacking the cherus element, or in this case the marirus element of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, and therefore you're not Yotze, completely undermines the mitzvah of Mara when you shove it down your throat. You might think, Kol Salka Daitka, the same thing should apply to matzah. And that's why there's so many Gemaras about starving yourself on Erev Pesach in order to eat matzah L'Teyov. And so you would think that enjoying the matzah is critical. Kol Mashmalon, no, it's not critical. But, says Rav Zilberstein, the Gemara never questioned whether or not he has to make birchas hanenim and birchas hamazon on the matzah when he's swallowing it. And the answer is because there's another mechayev in birchas hanenim that's irrelevant hanos grono, so you're not tasting anything in your taste buds, you're shoving it down your throat, and that's called hanos meyav. And that itself is enough of a mechayev for the mitzvah of birchas hanenim and lefaneah and the bracha lachmeah. Now again, we don't have time for this, but I just want to throw out the Chassam Sofer. The Chassam Sofer has pages and pages in his tshuvas about the difference between Anos Meov and Anos Grono. And the Chassam Sofer is of the opinion that with regard to Yom HaKippurim, everybody agrees that it all depends on Anos Meov. Why? Because the Iser is an Iser Inui, and the Gemara talks about Yisuve Daite. That's why there's a special shear of how much you have to eat in order to violate Yom Kippur, and that's called Kikilseves Agasa, because the Gemara says that gives you Yishev Adas. You're in a starving situation, and you feel, to some minimal extent, it quiets down that hunger pain, and you feel somewhat satiated, and Hanos Meov is enough to qualify as a Hafka of Inui. Again, I'm just mentioning this if you're interested. There's a lot of discussions here. What I would like to talk to you about now is a tshuva, which again, if you have the pages that David was kind enough to send around, you may find it as page Resh Nun from this Sefer of Heviani Chadarav, if it happened to have appeared on your screen. And you know, here in Israel, there's reshet, how do you say in English, a network of synagogues, which are called Chaniche HaYeshivas. We have one here in Harnov, and there's one in a great neighborhood, not far from here, it's walking distance, called Romema. And the Rav of Chaniche HaYeshivas in Romema, his name is Rav Naftali Kupshitz, who comes from a great scion of Gdolim. He has a bunch of tshuvas here. Each one is more stunning than the other. I'm going to share with you one of them. And he's talking about the following situation. Now, again, I don't know where you're up to in Canada as far as davening inside and outside. I could just tell you that here in these parts, there's still many, many people who are davening outside and are not going into shuls. Again, it's a slow process that's changing, but it's not happening overnight. So a lot of what he writes here is still very relevant today. And he's talking about the following kind of scenario, where you're out there in a chatzer or in a merpeset, you're out on a porch or some sort of a courtyard, and the minyan is not all together in one place. So here you have a gigantic machlokas that dates back to the time of the Rishonim. Is it enough, as the Rashba would have it, that you see each other even from a distance and you're not really within the same makom technically? Or like all the other Rishonim who disagree with the Rashba, they say, no, you have to be in one place. So that if you're davening in a shul, that's fine, and you certainly have a minyan if there are 10 men. But if you're davening outside, then most of these minyanim, outdoor minyanim, are relying on the Rashba. And the post can already write, you know, b'makom, you know, b'makom, b'shas hadchak, we're going to fall back on the Rashba, and we're going to say that you could have a tzirif minyan even from one chatzah to the other if you can see each other. Fine. But now, he wants to ask the following question. What happens if the porch that you're on, or even the courtyard, might be roofed? Once it's roofed, which is called tikra, we have a principle called pi tikra yored v'sosen, which means that from the outer lip of that roof, there is an imaginary mechitza that goes up and down. Now, you and I might say, well, who needs it? Well, why do I want to confuse myself and make life more complicated myself by applying the principle of pi tikra yored v'sosen? So he proves that in a number of different scenarios, we need pi tikra yored v'sosem, and it's a really good thing, and we should be applauding it. In this particular case, it's not a good thing. Meaning that if we apply pi tikra yored v'sosem, then if you're standing on another mechitz, on another merpeset, or another chatzer, and I'm in this chatzer, and one of the two chatzeros, or one of the two merpasot, is roofed, then guess what? We have a mechitza that separates our group from your group. And my group is made up of five, your group is made up of five, there's a mechitza in between us. And to the best of my knowledge, no one has addressed this issue. And again, we've been reading a lot about tefillos and about outdoor davening and getting a minyan and who could say Kaddish and when can you say Kaddish. No one, except for this Rabbi Naftali Kupshitz, has raised the issue of mechitzos, that there are, the problem is that in many, many situations where we're davening outside, there are mechitzos, and that's called pi tikra yored v'sose. And in this brilliant piece of research, he mentions a gigantic machlokes amongst the poskim about a case in Sukkah of an imaginary mechitza. And there are a number of different scenarios and situations in which you have imaginary mechitzos. But the problem is that as a result of those imaginary mechitzos, the sukkah is going to become invalid. And the reason for invalidating the sukkah in those imaginary sukkahs is because by setting up that mechitza, you're going to have less than three mechitzos. So imagine a case where you have, let's say, again, I don't want to get into all the details here, Tzuras HaPesach in the middle of your sukkah, or imagine a case where there are people who are sitting under the roof of the sukkah, and they want to be part of the sukkah, but we're going to apply Pi Tikra Yored V'Sosem. So again, let's say the roof is, for that matter, has schach on it, or something kosher for schach, and we're going to apply Pi Tikra Yored V'Sosem. And now we have people who are actually sitting outside of a sukkah. Why? Because of this imaginary mechitza that splits the sukkah into two places. into two parts. Now, again, if you have the text and you have the time to go through this, because I still have to cover a few more things today that are on my agenda, you'll take a look on page Resh Nun. The last paragraph on the page starts with the words Vinistape. And basically, here's where the machlokas arises, conceptually. Is an imaginary machita a machita, period? That's all it is. And, by the way, Bobby, I don't know why I see you upside down, like you're on the moon. I don't know, things are moving around. So, it's very distracting for me. Now I see your beautiful face. Okay, fine. All right. Anyway, so now the question is, how do these imaginary machitas work? Is it A or B? A is the machita is a given. The halacha recognizes that machitza, like it or not. Or B, the halacha gives you the option of recognizing this machitza as a machitza. But we don't shove it down your throat. It's not like bowl of matzah that we spoke before, where somebody shoves matzah down your throat. We're talking about a case where the imaginary machitza, the halachic legal machitza, is there. It exists. But you don't want it. You would rather do without it. And this is going to be a gigantic controversy. And interesting, he quotes one of the Gedolim of the earlier generation, Rabbi Avram Genachovsky. And I'm pretty sure I have to do more research. I know the family. But anyway, Rabbi Avram says that he told his people that when the Shliach Tzibur is waiting for the repetition of Chazor Sashatz till he gets a minion in the Beis Medrash, he has Asara, he says, don't include in the Asara those who are standing under the roof of the Ezras Noshim. So it seems that, again, he doesn't go into detail about the engineering and the architecture of the shul. I can only guess that there is a separate roof for the Ezras Noshim. Maybe they're on the higher level, or maybe they're lower, below, whatever it might be. And he says, when you're calculating the Asara, be makbid, that all the Asara are in your roofed area. None of them are on the side. And the reason for that is because of Pi Tikra Yored Vesosim. And therefore they're not mitzarev to the minyan. Pilei Plaim. This is one of the Gdolim, Mechveis, 100 years ago, maybe more, I don't know, he doesn't tell you when, who is paskening that because of Pi Tikra Yored Vesosim, those guys are not part of the minyan. So in our case of the Mirpesa that we spoke about, you could talk from now until doomsday about the Rajba, that the Rajba is saying, well, we see each other, blah, blah, blah. But that won't help you if we're separated by a mechitza because we're in two different rooms. Unless you reject this Rav Avram Genachovsky and you say, well, I don't want that Pi Tikra Yored Vesosim. I want to be part of this minyan. I want to be part of this room. I reject the existence of this machitza. And again, I only touched on scratch the surface of this tshuva. It's a brilliant tshuva with a lot of bakiyas back and forth. He's got Beis Yosef's here, and he's got Rashba's here, and he's got Shulchan Aruch, and he's got a Bir Agra. So I didn't even touch on this, but I just wanted to share with you this issue that, at least to me, I didn't know anyone who had addressed it, and it's very, very relevant in many, many situations today with regard to outdoor minyanim and possibly even an indoor minyanim, irrelevant to Corona. Now, yeah, you know what, Joe, would you be able to hold your question? Go ahead, ask your question. Sorry, there are a lot of people here, and I'm trying to...
Just very quickly, with regards to this, you're talking about, you know, Clanton Park, there's a balcony, right? So is he saying that the balcony, anybody below the balcony will be considered in another room?
Correct. That's what we're saying. That if you're in a balcony that has a roof on it, if that roof is a separate area for that section of seating, so you have a group of women that sit, normally women, but he's talking about men are here, but the women sit under a roof in a balcony, then the Pi Tikra, wherever that roof ends, creates an imaginary chitza going up and down. Okay, I just wanted to, if you want to research this beyond me, just write me an email and I'll prepare for next week, because many, many profound details. Those who are learning Erevin this year, you know, for Daf Yomi, will be very fascinated by some of these issues. But what I wanted to talk to you about is the latest Gilyon, the latest edition of Emek, of Omek HaPshat. And there, we don't have time for everything. Most of what he discusses here in the latest edition of Omek HaPshat is what he calls Lachash Baduk Umenuset. And this has to do with, you know, people who are desperately ill and whether or not they can go back to the Talmud, the Gemara, and take from the Gemara various kinds of therapies. And many of them are based on Lachash. Who could translate Lachash for me? Whispering? No, there's got to be a better word. Incantations, I think they're called in fancy English. So there's certain things that you say as you're, you know, as you're doing this around, like, for example, you have something caught in your throat, and you, chas v'shalom, you could die from it, so you say, chad, chad, noches, bala, bala, noches, chad, chad. I mean, there are various lechashim. Anyway, so if we have time today, I want to talk to you about that. But what's more fascinating to me is that on page 3 of this this Gilyon of the Omek HaPshat, in a separate box on the top, he has a discussion about Birchas HaGomel. Now, what we're talking about is someone who had corona, and Baruch Hashem, he recovered. And now the question is he Chayiv and HaGomel? So we're not talking about a case of someone who was deathly ill, Chas V'Shalom, he was on a ventilator. I mean, I was saying Rabbi Keller from Tells in Chicago was on a ventilator already 6 months. I've been saying 3 times a day a tefillah for him. Unfortunately, he passed away just 2 days ago. But for those people who survive a ventilator, I don't know what percentage that is, they certainly have to bench Gomel. There's no question about it. But then we go down a madrig. We talk about people who are hospitalized or people who weren't hospitalized but they had heavy fever, and there are many, many different madrigas. Rav Weiss, Rav Osher Zelig Weiss, in one of his tshuvas about corona, he writes that as far as the Sfaradim are concerned, anyone who had corona should make Birchas HaGomel. As far as Ashkenazim is concerned, if he had a very light case, and certainly if he had no symptoms whatsoever, he doesn't make the Brach of HaGomel, unless he was Nafal Lemishkov. Now, if he was Nafal Lemishkov, it means that he had general weakness in his body. He already fits into a category in Halacha called a Chola She'ein Bo Sakon. So the Rofim, the physicians, have determined that his life is not in danger. Should he recite a Birchas HaGomel? And here Rav Weiss says that if he had general weakness in his body, it means that this disease never has affected him in a serious way, and it could have easily been ended up a lot worse. Hashem saved him, and therefore he's like a Yotzei Mibeis HaSurim, and he has to recite the Brach. If, on the other hand, a person went into quarantine, let's say, and he didn't feel any sort of symptoms, and it could very well be, and we can even test it to prove that he had corona, he will not make a brach. Now Rav Rubin, Yitzchak Rubin, who's a few feet from here in Har Nof, that's where you may remember the terrible terrorist attack took place. Anyway, Rav Rubin has a Parsha sheet for Parshas Emor in this case, and he writes that Koshel Lasseis Kitzva Brura Mitzarch Levarchu Milo. He says that there's so many gray areas here for Ashkenazim as to whether they should bench HaGomel or not, and he tries to give guidelines, but at the end of the day, he says that there are so many, what should I call it, Beinashmashos, you know, Twilight Zone cases, and it's very difficult. And at the end of his tshuva, he wants to suggest that maybe a person, if he was not hooked up to a ventilator, if he was not hospitalized, maybe he should make Birkas HaGomel if he had certain symptoms without Shemu Malchus. He'd just leave out Shemu Malchus. What am I fascinated about? And again, we only have a few minutes. Anyone who has to leave, that's fine. If you could stay 5 minutes later. Here, in the Omek HaPshat, on page 3 of the latest Gilyon, he has a fascinating discussion here. In a case of a suffek, what to do, and you don't know whether to recite HaGomel. I don't know about you guys, I have this all the time. Very often in my life, I have a suffek Birkas HaGomel. And he quotes a tshuva from Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. And this is fascinating, because when the Shulchan Aruch himself says there's a doubt, like in Aruch Haim Siman Reish Yud Tes, he's got two opinions with regard to Birkas HaGomel, and let's say he was in danger, but not such danger, he doesn't fit into the four categories of danger, which are enumerated by the Gemara in Brachos, then he says in such a case, Tov Levarech below Azkar Shemu Malchus, like we saw before in Rav Rubin's Tshuva. Good. So that can help us in all these gray area cases of Corona. But Rav Shlomo Zalman has a very fascinating Eitzah. I don't know if you're aware of this. I was totally unaware of this. And he says that in the morning, when he gets to the bracha that Chazal added on as a tag on to the Birkas HaShachar, which ends with the words HaGomel Chasadim Tovim Liamo Yisrael, he should make sure that another 9 people are listening when he makes that bracha out loud. Rabosa, are you aware of this? I never heard of this. This is brand new to me. So he will recite HaGomel Chasadim Tovim Liamo Yisrael, as printed in the Siddur, out loud in front of another 9 people. He should try to be makpid that amongst the other 9 people there are 2 Talmidei Chachamim. Okay, that's a sugya of HaGomel. And then he adds that he should also perhaps add 2 words to the end of the bracha. And he should say Shegmalani Kol Tov, because then he has an exact duplicate of the nusach of Birchas HaGomel. And he asks the question, well, we don't change the nusach HaBrachos, that's called Mishana Mimatbeya Shetovu Chachamim. He says, no, Mishana means when you make a change in the Nusach HaBrocha, if you add something after you've already recited and completed the Nusach HaBrocha, that's not a violation of Mishana Mimatbeya Shetovu Chachamim. So we don't have a minug of reciting, you know, HaGomel Chayavim Tovo Shegmalati Kol Tov, but if he adds that, and he has Kavana in his Brocha, that should be in place of Birkas HaGomel. He has another 9 people that are listening to him. He says this is the best way of getting out of the suffix. And again, I'm fascinated by this because I think it's going to help me in many ways. And Rav Shlomo Zalman says that this is much better than saying the bracha without Shemu Malchus. I the only pella I have is how come the Shulchan Aruch didn't think of this 4.5 centuries before Rav Shlomo Zalman? And he says, because without Shema Malchus, it's really not a bracha at all. There's no such thing as a bracha. The halacha doesn't recognize the validity of a bracha without Shema Malchus. It's just that he's mare es ritzono la'odis l'Hashem. It's just sort of a way of his telling God, if I only could, and I had those suffix, I would certainly express my gratitude. This is the best I can do under the circumstances. But if you add it to this particular nusach ha-bracha, at the end of HaGomel Chasadim Tovim, then, Liamo Yisrael, then you are saying it with Shemu Malchus. And it's a bona fide bracha. And to boot, you're going to add Shegmolani Kol Tov. And he offers another suggestion, which he thinks is not a good suggestion, that when you get to Vayivarech David, right before the Shiras Hayom, where you have Shemu Malchus, it says, Baruch Ata Hashem Elokei Yisrael, and then it goes on to say, Lecha Hashem HaMamlocha. So, Lecha Hashem HaMamlocha is considered Malchus. And then, he should recite the Bracha Ugmalani Kol Tov in front of 10 people. And he quotes the Piskei Tshuva, who is Hungarian, right? He, one of the poskim in Hungary, and he says that's what you should do if you have a Safi. Says Rav Shlomo Zalman, I don't think that's a good idea, because to make such a bracha publicly, you know what? He's adding something in the middle of Psukei to Zimra. It's just not appropriate to make that publicly. But if you add to the bracha of Agomel Chasodim Tovim Liam Yisrael Shek Malani Kol Tov, that's not considered Vishana Mimatbea Shetovu Chacham. I thought that was worth its weight in gold. So let's just very quickly summarize what we covered today. First of all, we discussed the question of using a mask that requires you to adjust this metal pas. Secondly, we discussed the question of how to choose which of the 10 people in the community will get to daven in the shul. We discussed the tshuva about Birkas HaNenim in someone who never, because of corona, he has no taste buds and he can't enjoy the food. We discussed the case of Amida, of a kind of a false. We discussed the case of Paritz Muvala Omed when you don't have, or P. Tikra Yori Visosen when you don't have a bona fide Mechitza. And if it's a halachic Mechitza, can he say, I don't want that Mechitza? And as a result, he could be mitztarif with a minion. And finally, we discussed the question of someone who's in a suffix, whether he has to recite Birkas HaGomel or not, with the Eitza of Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. What we didn't get a chance to discuss, which you have in the pages that I sent you, is the use of Aquagel on Shabbos. And if it's a very thick kind of a solution, it's not like liquid soap, and it might be a problem, and we'll see what the poskim have to say about this. Joe and David, both of you are asking the question about the floor of the Ezras Noshim. There are men in the men's section who are sitting underneath the floor of the Ezras Noshim. And I think that's exactly what this tshuva is addressing, because that's P. Tikra Yorid Vesosen. Now, additionally, I've mentioned in the past that those who are in a separate room, even if it's adjoining the shul, the main base medrash, they have a problem because of what's called omed merubah laparutz. Because even if the door to that adjoining room is open, then again, you may have the Rashba to rely on, that you're seeing the people and they can see you. But nevertheless, if we go with Hilchas Mechitzos, this is clearly a case of Omed Merubah LaParutz. And Bobby, your point is well taken, that Rav Salvechik used to allow people to daven and join the minyan even though they were outside the classroom. And, you know, here you have to figure out the logistics of it. Not only were the doors open to the vestibule outside the classroom, but there was no separate room. And I'm assuming that the Rav thought that this vestibule, which is a direct extension of the classroom where we davened, had the status of the classroom. It was not separated by mechitzos. Again, there were mechitzos on the right side, but if you incorporate the vestibule into the room itself, you don't have to worry about those mechitzos. All right, these are some of the questions that have to be researched. So I wish you all well, and thank you so much for joining. Next week we can get a little bit more into the Shaila about Birchas HaGomel and try to figure out which corona recoveries would be required to recite Birchas HaGomel, which would be in a suffix situation, and then maybe talk a little bit more about various lechoshim and special procedures that are not what you call regular classic medicine, their Talmudic medicine, and can we see this as alternative medicine? Are we allowed to copy the Talmud and try to imitate those medicinal procedures and therapeutic procedures and use them today? And believe it or not, there's a serious halakhic problem based on a cherem of many hundred years ago in using those medicinal methods that are mentioned in the Talmud. But Mirtz Hashem, we'll see if we can get into that next time. All right, thank you again, and we should always hear better news during these difficult and trying days.